This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Everybody, happy Wednesday. As we welcome you in to Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bontoni. Loaded 2 hours on deck here as we appreciate you hanging out with us as always. You had a fun night last night. Well, a handful of VSiN crew went to T-Mobile Arena to watch the NBA Cup. You actually were watching hockey last night.
Yeah, so I have something to say. You know, and look at me. I pride myself in anything I say in this mic. I would say to the face of any athlete, coach, or media member, any critique, any slight, Gil Alexander, I said it to you today, but I'm going to say it again. On Thanksgiving, I was nice enough to come in and work, and I brought our crew bagels. Now what are they going to expect? Because he brought them all tickets to the NBA Cup. And so when I bring in Mexican candy like I did yesterday for everybody else, means absolutely nothing from now on. Because Gil had to go and show me up.
Yeah.
So thanks a lot, Gil.
I feel like the cupcakes I bring on Super Bowl Sunday are meaningless now. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a tough. We've got an uphill battle to climb. Mike Wright.
No wonder you hate Gil. You've told me this so often.
So many times.
That you can't stand the guy. I totally understand getting one up by this guy now.
For the record, not true at all. And big fan of him, including me on the Megapod. So let's not go down that road. One gripe I do have of that group, though. I heard Kelly Bidlin say on a numbers game earlier today that T-Mobile Arena has average, you know, just normal standard arena food.
Yeah.
Inaccurate. If you have not tried the meatballs with pesto and ricotta at T-Mobile Arena, you have not lived. Ooh. And you are underselling the goods that they have at that venue. They've got some sneaky good items. I'm just saying.
Side note before we move on from this, Justin, if you could please go to Kelly's Twitter account. Can you pull the alleged selfie that Kelly tried to take today, unless it's already in the system? Right. Holy smokes, my man needs to learn how to take a selfie. Not a flattering angle.
And also before we move too far off of the food angle, someone made a frozen pizza last night, that someone was you. After the way you treated me for my frozen pizza debacle, you said, "So just make a pizza." If I'm having a pizza at home with the kids, I'm just making one. Look what you did.
I blame my wife who brought home a frozen pizza and just told me to make it.
Okay, yeah.
And when your wife tells you to do something, you do it.
But I hope you did enjoy the minor league hockey game, Silver Knights. Yeah, good. Yeah,
got to go out there, check it out. Good building. Got to watch some hockey. Kid got a little interested in the older one. So that was fun. And went down on the ice for pictures.
Oh, awesome.
As well. So that was cool.
That's fun. I'm glad they enjoyed it. And I mean, hockey, obviously, like with the youth, it's booming here in town. So maybe not going football. Maybe he goes hockey as he grows up.
So my son does play baseball already. Yep. And I told him, because his best buddy does play hockey. And I said, "Hey, do you want to, you want to learn how to play hockey? Like JR's, we're watching." And he goes, "Baseball's my sport."
Oh, okay.
Like, you got it, bud.
That'll be easier for you to coach.
Correct.
So yes. There's that.
Oh, look at this. You see, there it is at the NBA Cup. It all matters because, you know, the Knicks won yesterday. They covered -2.5 sports betting.
He's the one taking the picture. Shouldn't he be the most prepared for when it's going to come?
It's a very unflattering angle.
Where's the smile? You're not smiling, Kelly.
It's a good point. It looked like he was caught by surprise. Yes. By his own picture.
Big fan. Okay. We got lots to get to here on the program. Let's set the table with all the betting angles we've got upcoming with the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
Excited for our two guests. Beginning in a half an hour, we'll have Kendall Valenzuela of Fantasy Life join us like she always does on a Wednesday, talk through some fantasy implications, playoffs, lots of injuries this week. So what might that mean for your playoff fantasy lineup? And Taylor McGregor of ESPN and ABC. She will be on the sideline for the Texas A&M Miami game in the first round. Excited to get her thoughts on that, as well as all of the games coming up this weekend.
I mean, obviously the most interesting game, I think, narratively. I understand Oklahoma and Alabama, I think, from a football standpoint, is the most intriguing, but the narrative of the two teams that beat Notre Dame taking on each other, we're still alive for Miami national championship. You know, it's funny, like and we'll have to ask her about this. For me, at least, the narrative of Miami as a national championship contender kind of flew out the window because we were so focused on whether or not they were going to make it in. Now, all of a sudden, you're like, "Oh, like, isn't this a team that could maybe win this whole thing?" Same thing with Texas A&M potentially. So really fun matchup. Can't wait to talk to her about it.
And Miami's been a pretty trendy underdog as well, getting 3.5 in that game, total 49.5, with exactly what you're talking about, though. Like, the national championship is still alive, although winner of this game does have to go through the defending champ in Ohio State. So we'll get to all of that in a bit. Lots of bowl talk in general. We've got the Pure Bowl, where I do have a play in tonight, as well as West Coast Bias Bowl Edition. All of the West Coast bowl games we didn't get into last Wednesday, Thursday. We're going to hit on today, including we got some big news in UNLV's bowl game against Ohio, JVT. I was telling you before we came on air, Ohio first-year head coach Brian Smith officially fired for cause this morning.
Yeah, UNLV up to a 7-point favorite at some spots, so we'll have to see. That's circa here, by the way, that 7. Is a coach firing worth that? And obviously, there's a lot of transfer portal ramifications as well, but a pretty big deal as we head into bowl season. And this is what we talked about. You know, Adam, we go up to the website of Easton.com, all these bowl releases 72 hours before, all these sort of things. Bowl season is all about information, man. Yep. This is a preseason, but after the season, and you get stuff like this that alters the line.
Coaches moving on, coaches fired, narratives, opt-outs. That's the way that these games' numbers shift. And, of course, plenty of NFL news and notes, which is where we're going to kick things off. Of course, the big news of the day, ESPN's Adam Schefter, the first to report earlier today, the Dolphins are benching Tua Tagovailoa, turning to Quinn Ewers as the starting quarterback this coming week and potentially beyond it. And it's funny how this escalated too, because JVT, after the game, Mike McDaniel's on the podium saying, hey, I'm not going to make any rash decisions. Then yesterday it's quarterback play wasn't good enough. Everything's on the table. And now here we are, you're done. Before we do get onto the future implications, because that's huge, and I know we talked about it a little bit already yesterday, the immediate betting implications this week against the Cincinnati Bengals, Miami hosting Cincinnati, this thing was pick 'em, Cincinnati minus 2.5. Now I'm seeing at DraftKings, Cincinnati a 4.5-point road favorite.
Yeah, I think it makes some sense. Look, Tua has not played particularly well, despite the fact that the Dolphins had been on that winning streak heading into the game against the Steelers. Much of it had to do with the running game. A lot of it had to do with some garbage time statistics as well for Tua, as we saw again on Monday night. But there's still, I think, a minimal difference between a Quinn Ewers and a Tua Tagovailoa, especially when Quinn was their third-string quarterback. They leapt over Zach Wilson. And we talked about that yesterday. You know, of the two, why would you pick Quinn? What's my favorite phrase?
Got to see what you have.
You got to see what you have. I mean, at one point, let's be honest, at one point we were talking about Quinn Ewers as a first-round pick. So there is something there that might have some potential. I don't know if it'll land, but you got to see it. So I think it makes all the sense in the world. And I also think, despite the fact that you're benching a quarterback for poor play, there is a downgrade because of that.
Yeah. Crazy to think just last summer, July 2024, Tua signs the four-year, $212.5 million extension. He's got $54 million guaranteed for next year already. If they do release him, it would cost $99 million in dead money. For context, we remember Denver did it with Russell Wilson. That was an $80 million salary cap hit. So this is even more than what that was.
Yeah.
And I will say, though, for Denver, it's worked out. They're in a position, they're in the playoffs. If the playoffs started right now, one seed in the AFC. But this feels like a very different situation.
Oh, of course. You also had to get a quarterback, and who knows if like Bo Nick's big picture is actually it, but they drafted a quarterback that's good enough to get them to this point right now. So you got to find that angle too. Mm-hmm. So it's a good point. I didn't think about the Russell Wilson comp, but either way, you know, man, if you were so willing to move on like this, why in the world would you give him that kind of a contract? It's just wild to me, because it's not like he's gotten worse. And year to year, if you look at Tua's production, it has been steadily heading in one direction. At the same time, I mean, I'm not the only one that could look at that and figure that out. You know, I would figure that the team would be able to look at that and see that. But either way, you got yourself in a position. So now future-wise, I mean, what do you do with him? Do you cut him? Do you try to find somebody who would trade you for him? You know, it is somewhat NBA-esque. And like, for a while, we had these big albatross contracts. We had John Wall. We had Bradley Beal. Like, what are you going to do with these things? You just swap them for each other, which would put you in the context of a Kyler Murray to a Tagovailoa trade, potentially. But these big contracts, man, they kill you. You can see all that, as you pointed out.
Well, and I mean, that's a great example with both of those guys, right, who got these massive deals despite all of the questions about them. It's just because they were the next in line. And does that mean inevitably they have to become the highest paid or in that certain bracket, depending on your level, just because they're the next guy in line?
So Doug Kazarian, friend of the show, has this. We've gotten into arguments at local watering holes about it all the time. And he's on the side of that, which is like, well, just like, why? Why would you do it when a guy reaches a point where you have to pay him? Just go find another one. But as I always argue with Doug, that phrase, go find another one, is doing a lot of work because it's hard to find the other one.
As evidenced by the fact that freaking Philip Rivers is playing in the National Football League right now. There's also a lot of bad quarterback play around the league. I mean, Bryce Young is obviously a starting quarterback in this league Would he be a starting quarterback many other teams around the league right now? I don't know. Like, there are a lot of these guys that you have these questions about. But you bring up the Kyler Murray of it all. I initially, when Daniel Jones went down, I was like, so, I mean, could it be Kyler Murray time? Could it be Tua time in Indy now?
Maybe. I mean, who knows? I would think the only way that happens is that they release him, because the Colts are not taking on that contract. Because I put in there the Colts, the Steelers, like just some of these teams. These teams that fancy themselves contenders that were just a piece away. And for those of you who are screaming right now, well, they wouldn't see that. Trust me. I think we made the joke a couple of weeks ago, whatever it was. These are like bad relationships where every coach looks at the opposite, you know, the partner and goes, I can fix them.
Yeah.
They come with me and I can make them into a livable partner. And every coach thinks that they can fix every troubled quarterback. We see it all the time. I would not be shocked. You know, I think I put this in the rundown. There's a prop offshore. Will Tua Tagovailoa start in the first game of the season next year? Doesn't matter with who. It's just, will he start game one? Yes, plus 120. No, minus 160. I wouldn't be shocked if he's a starter somewhere.
And in that same like frame of mind, say what you want about Mike McDaniel and his lack of charisma on the podium and potentially as a leader in general, but coming out of like what he inherited with Tua, who was like a broken, unconfident guy, he did fix him for a time. Is there at least some level of, I don't want to use the word excitement, but positivity with Mike McDaniel of what he could do with a different quarterback?
I personally think, I know a lot of people thought Mike McDaniel saved his job with this run they were on. I think Mike McDaniel's on a 3-game trial, and it's what can you do with Quinn, and if you can do something good, we'll bring you back.
Well, a reminder right now, it is the best time of year for bettors, and if you haven't checked out Boomer Sportsbook, now's the time, bringing you all the action in football, hockey, basketball, and more. Use our code VSIN250 when you sign up for Boomer's mobile account. They're going to match your first deposit up to $250 in bonus bet. Learn more at betwithboomer.com. Must be 21. Terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly. More Money Moves coming up after this.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The sharp plays is already there. They don't just follow the market. They help shape it. Listen, you're not going to outsmart billion-dollar sportsbooks or full-time sharps on your own. But with sharp plays, you don't have to. Powered by advanced AI, connected to proven insider sources, and active across the NFL, NBA, MLB, as well as college hoops and more, sharp plays is delivering the edge serious bettors rely on. Free daily reports, real-time alerts, market-moving insights, all straight to your inbox or X feed. And they've been backing it up with documented results, public logs, and transparent receipts since 2011. SharpPlays.com, trusted by the pros, monitored by the book. Stay ahead of the line. Visit SharpPlays.com. A moment ago, we did see an update from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport that Aaron Glenn, head coach of the New York Jets, has announced Brady Cook will get the start once again this week for the Jets. And I have not seen a following update on what that might mean in terms of just the general health of Tyrod Taylor or Justin Fields at this point.
Got to assume it's not great, considering that Brady Cook threw 3 picks and completed about 66% of his passes, but only 5.3 yards per attempt.
And in the 2 games that we have seen him, 1 touchdown, 5 total picks. So it hasn't been great in general.
I mean, at least the ball's not hitting the ground at a high rate.
Has more. What didn't I give you a stat on Sunday that was ridiculous? It was like Brady Cook in the first half had more passing yards than I think Justin Fields had like in that. 5 games at some point.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. Yeah,
some just ridiculous stat that you shouldn't have for a quarterback. And that's why I think we've seen all of those comments throughout the course of the year. It's like, can he throw a forward pass?
Right.
So at least that was a little better.
Sure. I mean, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I think is what they say. So
I thought beauty was in the eye of the beer holder.
Dang
it. But in terms of this week, they are in New Orleans taking on the Saints, and we talked about it earlier. It's always a little bit weird seeing the Saints as a 4.5-point favorite, considering just the way that this whole season has gone, but they have been playing much better as of late.
Well, it'd be even weirder then, I guess, to see that they are a 5.5-point favorite. Superbook in the last 2 minutes,
wow.
I would assume, coinciding with the news that Brady Cook is the starter, has bumped that number up to 5.5.
Was that not kind of the expectation? At least in my mind, I thought that...
You know, I find that I don't think about the Jets that often.
It's a fair
point. So I don't know what I really did
think. You do seem to think about Tyler Shuck pretty often, though. You like him.
I did, yes. We talked about it on Pod of the Futures. We brought it up yesterday. Shucky has an opportunity here as we head down the stretch to build a, I don't know, late push. What's a horse racing term? Closer? Is he a closer?
Sure.
He could be a closer here and maybe win Rookie of the Year. Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Hasn't that number come down? I'm not going to say just because you've talked about it. I see 50. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, 25-1 yeah. still at DraftKings
Now, it has come down to the grand scheme of things. He was obviously triple digits to win this thing just a few weeks ago. So maybe that's what you're thinking of.
I don't know. I just didn't want to make sure that I didn't give you credit for making the number.
No, I actually hate when people do that. It's like, yo, we're talking about it. Here it is. Yo, it's moving.
That said, I do want to give you some credit because you were on the Knicks yesterday, -2.5. That ends up coming home. I mean, last I checked.
I got a tweet yesterday. It was like, nice pick against the Knicks. I was like, I think I picked.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had the Knicks, which you did. And they were, maybe, did he tweet you that when they were down double digits with 2 minutes to go in the third quarter? Maybe that's when the tweet came.
That's a good point. Yeah. Oh, come on. You blew your load early. Come on, buddy.
You can't do that. Yeah. You can't do that.
I wonder why he didn't tweet me back after I responded.
Even trailed by 5 entering the fourth quarter. But obviously, they rally. They outscore San Antonio 35-19 in the fourth. Wembanyama, for as much as we've been kind of like hyping up having him back, he actually really struggled in the second game back. Game worse, -18 on the court in 25 minutes off the bench. Still limited minutes for him, obviously, as well.
Yeah, and then afterwards, I don't know if you saw, like in the postgame presser, he made a mention that he had lost somebody close to him. I think reports have now indicated that it was his grandmother. He only took like one question after that and left, so he was pretty distracted by it. So maybe that's part of the reason why. But we should give the Knicks tons of credit for the way that they played in this game. You mentioned the comeback and the fact that there's a, you know, when you come out of a game that the Knicks have won, a championship nonetheless, and you're like, all right, well, who were the guys that really helped you out? Obviously, you're going to go to Jalen Brunson, who had 25 points on 11 of 27 shooting. You're going to go to OG Anunoby, who had 28 points in 40 minutes on 10 of 17 shooting. However, the unsung heroes, and he was a little sung here, Tyler Kolek had 14 points, some big threes for this team, ends up going for 14 points and plus 14 in 20 minutes. And how about Mitchell Robinson off the bench, Stormy? He has 15 rebounds. 10 of them offensively, 6 came in the fourth quarter, and they were leading to some really open shots for these guys. This was a team effort for the Knicks to get back into this thing and get it done. Did a great job of keeping Victor Wembanyama off the glass as well. Wemby only had 6 rebounds in the game. This was like a total team effort leading to a win here, and they did. They beat up San Antonio on the glass overall. In terms of offensive rebounds, it was 23-18, but in terms of total rebounds available, 59-42. Knicks were really impressive, I thought, in this game. And it goes back to what we talked about before. You know, we are, you know, short number, as we had discussed, only 2.5 on a neutral court against San Antonio. But also, I mean, this team continues now. I believe they're 11-2 in their last 13 games, ballparking with one of the best offenses in the NBA, playing a different style of basketball than they were last year. This Knicks team looks impressive. And in a weak Eastern Conference, you know, where, what would you say, the third best team? You can pick any one of four. Mm-hmm. Knicks look like they're going to be there the whole time, and this team's been really impressive during this run.
And they are the favorite to come out of the Eastern Conference right now. 3-1, Pistons 4-1, Cavs +450, and the Magic +750. Also, the Boston Celtics, who have played so much better than people thought they would given their injury situation coming into the year, 8-1. One thing I did want to ask you about, though, like, what is this banner situation?
So I guess they're not, but Tim McMahon on the Hoop Collective podcast today, I don't know if he said it in jest, but he said they're going to hang a ribbon.
So I don't know exactly. Mike Brown like intimated after the game that they were going to hang one. And then I saw an article up on ESPN.com that was saying maybe the players weren't that into it. And so we'll see what they end up ultimately doing with it.
I think the NBA is going to step in and tell them to hang something.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. Winning the NBA Cup and hanging the banner has been a bad omen because both the Bucks and Lakers have done it to this point. Both of those teams have also gone on to lose in the first round in that ensuing playoffs. And I agree, you know, the Bucks, there's an injury situation there.
I was going to say, this version of the Knicks in this season are better than the last two versions of those teams in their respective seasons.
But also, generally speaking, I say that part, yes, in jest. But I think about the fact that the last banner that was put up for the New York Knicks was the Eastern Conference in 1999. And this is what you want to celebrate as the next thing in the rafters.
No, that
seems a little odd to me.
No. Okay. So this is, I'm so glad you went down this path. I pray for times like this. So I've seen a lot of this from New York fans. Will Hill, I'm talking to you, buddy. I saw this from Chris Mad Dog Russo, where it was like, we're the Knicks. How could you hang this banner? I watched you riot in the streets when you split home court against Trae Young in a series. You lost 4-1. Like, stop acting like you're so elite that you can't celebrate this in a series in which you lost 4-1. You acted like you won the whole thing. Let's stop acting like we're too good for these sort of things. This is insane to me.
No.
I can't believe it. I'm not talking about you. It's the elitism of these New York fans. Like, what are you talking about? Hang a banner. If Adam Silver tells you to do it and be glad that you won something. You had Spike Lee out there taking pictures and rolling around the confetti yesterday. What are we talking about?
So my thing with this is, and listen, I appreciate you getting some of this out of your system now, although we do have an entire segment dedicated to West Coast bias a little bit later on in hour two.
That's right.
But with this part of it, just in general, to me, like, I think it's weird that they're hanging banners for this, period. Like, I think it's weird that the Lakers did it to begin with, period. No. Because for as much as the NBA does want to prop up the NBA Cup and its importance, and I think that's great, and it's awesome that the players get extra money for this, and they have put in the effort to make it a thing and make it special and make it unique. Is that banner worthy? That's supposed to be, like, what is elevated as conference titles and division win. Do you put that on the same level
if your boss titles? If the boss says so, yes. And Adam Silver, I think, is going to tell them to do it.
Adam Silver also wants them playing at college.
Like, I called it. Did I not talk to you about that? Or was that on local?
No, not to me.
I think maybe it was on local. I said, like, hey, what's the – because we talked about, hey, they're going to take this away. What is it going to do? And I said, well, one of the things they could do is maybe take it around to, like, college towns. And then, sure enough, that comes out. Adam Silver went to Duke, by the way. But the one of the things that was pretty funny, did you see, was it last night? Jalen Brunson, was that maybe after the semis or last night? Brunson was asked, and I like to ask you these questions because you're a media member that asks athletes and others questions. A media member asked him, do you plan on sharing the money with people in the building that don't get Emmy? And Brunson's like,
that puts him in such an unfair position to me.
First off, yes. And then he goes, well, we were, but thanks for ruining the surprise. So to your point, how is he supposed to answer that other than yes? I would have loved it. He's like, no, what are you talking about? Like, I'm playing for this money. I want it. But also, like, yeah, like, you ruined the surprise. You put the onus on him. It was a ridiculous sequence.
Like, are people going to start asking head coaches now that leave their respective college football programs if they're going to donate $100,000 to the next head coach? Because that's what John Summerall did. So is that going to be a normal question for every head coach that's moving on? You can't ask those kinds of questions, so in my opinion.
By the way, is it a letdown after winning a championship? They have to play Indiana coming up next.
Ooh.
Tomorrow. Is it a big letdown, a hangover, if you will, having to go from Vegas to then Indiana to take on the Pacers in a road spot?
Also, real quickly, I was laughing a little bit because I get the
Josh Hart.
It is about that. Just like I get the Bill Ady daily newsletters to my inbox every single day, okay, I also get the Athletics daily newsletters. And I was cracking up at the still shot they took from the trophy presentation portion of this was from immediately following that Josh Hart, Jalen Brunson moment. Okay. And, like, you see the turnaround from Brunson. That is immediate. That is the screen. That is the photo they chose from Getty Images for the daily newsletter.
Who didn't see it, Josh Hart stuck his thumb up Jalen Brunson.
Say what it was.
Rear end. Those are all scientific terms.
We got this episode here on Money Moves. We will have more basketball a little bit later on in the program, but for now, shifting gears to football. Kendall Valenzuela of Fantasy Life helping you get set for the playoffs next.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The perfect gift for you this holiday season or the sports bettor in your life. Right now, you can take advantage of our holiday special. Get VSiN Pro Access through May 1st for just $79. That gives you everything we do, including daily best bets from all of our show hosts and guests, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop tools, 24/7 video, so much more, including all things college football playoff we got coming up, college basketball, plus the summertime NFL draft, the Masters, March Madness. We've got it all. Don't miss this limited-time holiday special. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you can unwrap your betting edge this holiday season. Again, VSIN.com/subscribe. And I hope some of you already got a gift in the fantasy football playoffs last week. I really hope you're off to a good start, that you didn't get Kyle Pitts or Trevor Lawrence in your round last week. And to help us talk through all things fantasy, which of course we can also put to work from an odds and prop betting perspective, Kendall Valenzuela joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Football analyst over at Fantasy Life, Sirius XM, Fantasy Channel 87 as well. Kendall, and this past weekend, featured a little more chaos than usual, I think, especially with some of these season-ending injuries and the like. How did you unpack this past week?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good week, right? We had great matchups. We had high scoring affairs in fantasy football, but you kind of just alluded to it. You had some injuries, like Micah Parsons going down was awful. Patrick Mahomes going down, already having a successful surgery on Monday and getting that done quickly. Like that was pretty bad, and the Chiefs are now out of it. So we've got a lot of teams with not a lot to play for. So it's kind of a question of how they're going to look going forward. But hopefully everyone was either playing Kyle Pitts or didn't have to face him, like you said.
Yeah. So let's talk about these quarterback changes. We'll go take them one by one. For the Miami Dolphins, we get the news today. Tua Tagovailoa is benched. Yep. It'll be Quinn Ewers. So how do we handle Miami? I know we've talked about general downgrades when guys like Phillip Rivers step in, but Ewers has a big arm, maybe some upside. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's some upside because I think there's some upside with any quarterback facing the Cincinnati Bengals. So I am cautiously optimistic, although I will say it's downgrades for me across the board. I think there were only three players that you were really starting with the Miami Dolphins, though. You're starting Devon Achane no matter what. You don't need us to tell you that. I think Jaylen Waddle is still in that territory of a wide receiver two for you. The one that I think a lot of people are going to get hung up on is Darren Waller for tight end because the Cincinnati Bengals give up the most fantasy points to a opposing tight ends. And so I actually downgraded him. He is a tight end. He's tight end 12 for me. So I think that still puts him in the category of if you picked him up off the waiver wire, you might not have better options, or you might look around and say, I want to play him ahead of guys like, you know, Chigakonkwo, Ferguson, Colston Loveland, Dalton Kincaid. But there is a limit to where I'm willing to go. So I have had to drop him down a little bit. Again, he's my tight end 12 this week. So I'm a little less optimistic than I was just, you know, 24 hours ago. But I think he's still someone that if you can stomach it, you want to believe that Quinn Ewers can at least just get him the ball against a really bad defense, then you can go ahead and continue to start him.
How about for Kansas City? Because you did mention it, obviously the biggest injury of the week at this most important position, Patrick Mahomes with the torn ACL. Gardner Minshew stepping in against the Tennessee Titans, who are bottom five overall defense. How does that affect the way you look at some of the other skill positions around him?
Yeah, and we have to be careful. We got news just an hour ago, maybe, that Rashi Rice is in the concussion protocol. So that's one where you have to watch out for him, too. So if you have Rashi Rice, just have a backup ready to go. I think, the one thing with me with Gardner Minshew is we've seen him before, right? He started with the Raiders in 2024. It wasn't beautiful. He had 9 starts. He was throwing for roughly 200 yards per game, 9 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. My thing is that I'm trying not to overreact too much because I still do think that this Kansas City Chiefs team, as much as people want to say, they're going to give up. They have nothing to play for. They haven't missed the playoffs since 2014, so they're not going to show up. I'm kind of countering with that and just saying I still think they're going to show up. I think if you're looking at Travis Kelce specifically, I still have him ranked, you know, in a decent range, right? He's still inside my top 10 because if we're looking at ADOTs, you know, Rashi Rice's ADOT average depth of target this season has been low. It's 4.9. Travis Kelce's sitting at 7.1. So I think if we're expecting just little dump off passes, it's probably going to be to Travis Kelce and Rashi Rice if he's able to play. So I do downgrade this team a little bit. Isaiah Pacheco, I hope no one has to start. Kareem Hunt as well. But I'm still holding out hope that Travis Kelce can just get you enough, right? 12 fantasy points. We'll take that every single day when we're talking about the tight end position. And hopefully Rashi Rice is able to go. Streamers, you know, you have to go to a different quarterback here. So I've been looking at, you know, Tyler Shuck, JJ McCarthy, maybe even a Bryce Young if you can stomach it. But yeah, that's a brutal blow for anyone managing Patrick Mahomes right now.
All right, let's sift through some of these injuries that we also have for a lot of different skill positions. The Green Bay Packers, namely, it seems that everything, the sky is falling almost. A lot of different guys, including along the offensive line, not practicing or would not have practiced today if not for the short week. So what do we do with Green Bay and these skill positions as they head into a short week against Chicago?
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because they've told us that Christian Watson, I believe, was practicing today. So I was kind of shocked to see that. So if Christian Watson's able to go out there, even though he re-injured the shoulder, the sixth drive of the game, if he's able to go out there and they believe that he can do that, I guess I'm going to have to put my trust in him because he's just been so good since returning from his injury. If there was any other player, if he's out that I'm comfortable in starting, it's probably Jaden Reed, right? You might look at Romeo Dobbs and say he's out there most of the time, but the targets are sitting right at Jaden Reed. So 85% of the routes for Romeo Dobbs, 65% for Jaden Reed. Both had 13% target share, but I just like Jaden Reed a little bit more here. Don't get roped into the Matthew Golden stuff. Maybe Matthew Golden could be the hero we didn't know we needed, but I'm not willing in the semifinals to put Matthew Golden out there. Jaden Reed's probably the only one that I'm comfortable with across the board for any of these receivers. If Christian Watson's out there, I'm just someone that errs on the side of I I believe if the player is able to go and the coaches say he's good to go, that I'm going to believe him. So I would start him if he says that he's capable of going out there.
On the other side, I know the Bears have had more success on the ground than they have through the air, but a couple wide receiver notables for them as well. Rome Odunze tried to give it a go last week, but re-aggravated the foot in warmups. And then Luther Burden, who was having such a good game, had to get knocked out with an ankle injury. Same question, I guess, but for the Bears offense.
Yeah, I think that I'm really holding out hope that Luther Burden can go this weekend, because I think he has potential to be a potential fantasy winner for you in the playoffs. Because when you looked at him before he went out with that injury, he was on pace. He had a season high 75 route participation rate. And then he got the ankle sprain in the third quarter. They said he's day to day. If he's able to go out there, I'm very, very excited about Luther Burden in this offense. I think DJ Moore, of course, people might look at him and say, well, I'm going to flex him now. And I do think if Luther Burden isn't out there, that is definitely an option. He had a ton of end zone targets, which he doesn't usually have. He had three in this game this past week against Cleveland, obviously caught two of them for those touchdowns. But the fun fact is that was only the fourth time in 124 career games that he's been targeted at least three times in the end zone. So this is one thing where I think you do move DJ Moore up if you have both of those guys out. But I'm really holding out hope that Luther Burden can go, because I will be playing him if he can. I'm going to be flexing him.
Do you have a favorite stream? Do you have something that you're going to tell somebody, hey, Kendall, look, I need somebody to save my playoff season here. Who is the guy I'm grabbing?
Man, save your playoff season. That's a lot to put on me. I will say, like, I'm still loving, and I don't think I've talked enough even about Juwan Jennings this season. Like, if people have Juwan Jennings, he could be in line for a really big week this week, especially if Ricky Pearsall's not able to go. I'm looking at him and saying to myself, okay, there is a chance here that he could put up some really big numbers. So you have to like what he's been giving you so far this season. If you want a really deep guy, I will say that I wrote up when I'm looking at, who was it? I can't even remember it right now. It's for the New Orleans Saints. Like, their running back situation is so dire that I wrote up Audric Estime. If you can't have Devin Neal go this week and you're still looking at Alvin Kamara not out there, I think Audric Estime could be someone that is so random, and it has to be just sheer luck, and you have to be in a really bad, desperate spot in those deeper formats. But he could come out and score a couple of touchdowns this weekend if he's the only running back that they have left that's healthy on that team.
And Kendall, just to go back to your thought on Juwan Jennings, even when the yardage hasn't been there, the touchdowns have. Six touchdowns in the last six games, including four in the last three. So he's been getting the points when you need him there. One last thing real quickly, a guy we didn't bring up yet was Devontae Adams, who pulled up lame with the hamstring and obviously a re-aggravation there as well. No firm word one way or another on his availability, but it is a short week. What's your approach to Devontae Adams?
Listen, as a Seahawks fan, I think he should rest. I don't think he should go out there. I think he should just take his time and, you know, just find yourself coming back in week 17. It's going to be totally fine, Devontae Adams. They don't need you this week. As a fantasy player, this is probably, and I went back and forth with Adam Ronis on SiriusXM on this today, but we went back and forth. If Devontae Adams, if they really say that he's going to go, I might not be comfortable playing him, because that feels like a decoy situation, or they just say he's going to get end zone looks. I don't know if I want to boom or bust wide receiver in my lineups with Devontae Adams this week, hoping that he finds the end zone. That hamstring injury looked bad. Go get Colby Parkinson. That's another one at the tight end position. Seahawks have a great defense, but they give up a lot of fantasy points to tight ends. Colby Parkinson can save your season this week, especially if you're looking for a streamer or just a tight end to put into your lineups. He's going to be in a lot of mine tomorrow.
How are you feeling against the Rams tomorrow, by the way?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Not great. Not great, but it's fine. Devontae Adams can sit. I just need Sam Darnold to not. We just need a clean game from Sam Darnold, and I wish that the run game was better. They had their worst game performance last week with Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet. If that got easier, it would be a lot easier for Sam Darnold, but I'm hoping for no four turnover games anymore from Sam. That's what I'll say.
And maybe more than four field goals would be great.
Please, Kendall, please. That'd be great.
You're awesome as always. Appreciate you. Everybody, make sure you check out the work over at Matt Berry's Fantasy Life and, of course, SiriusXM Channel 87 as well. You can follow Kendall at KValenzuela17. We got to step aside. Shifting gears to college football, Taylor McGregor of ESPN joins us next.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Thursday practices getting started or wrapping up, depending on what time zone you're in the National Football League. We have a couple of names to note here for a couple of teams. Panthers wide receiver Teteroa McMillan and Ike Ekwonu did not practice today for the Panthers as they had to do a big game this weekend against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we have a big name returning. It was just one game, but I feel like the Raiders are willing to say, let's get Geno Smith back out there. He will return to practice today, according to Adam Hill of the Las Vegas Review-Journal.
What a time to be alive. Back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Shifting gears, though, from the NFL to college football as the CFP first round gets underway this weekend. And even though Alabama-Oklahoma is the shortest spread, I think Texas A&M-Miami might be the best game. And we are very fortunate to have Taylor McGregor join us here on the Progressive Guest Line. She's going to be on the sideline for this one for ABC and ESPN coming up this weekend. Local time, 11 a.m. kickoff, noon Eastern. Perfect weather, low 70s and sunny. So I always feel good for the sideline reporter in that case. Taylor, welcome in. We appreciate you joining us. And I want to start with the home field out there at Texas A&M. I know you have done many a game out there in College Station. How impactful really is that for a Miami team that's only had four road games this year and they're going to be 100,000 strong in the stadium?
Yeah, it's about as good of an atmosphere as there is in college football. And I talked to Carson Beck today and, of course, asked him about that. And he downplayed it, of course, you know, a guy who spent a lot of time in the SEC. So he brought up trips to Alabama, Tennessee, saying he's used to it. And I found it interesting. I asked him how many times this season the teams had to use their silent cadence. And he said they used it one time against Florida State. And he goes, he really didn't even need it. He was like, my clap is loud enough. And so they're going in there hoping that the clap will work. So I kind of thought that was interesting. Maybe they don't really know how loud it could get, because I feel like out of games that I've done, it's about as loud of atmosphere as I've ever been a part of.
And honestly, Taylor, that's kind of a pet peeve of mine, at least throughout the course of this season, the amount of offenses that have continued to use the clap when it has not worked in loud environments. And I've done a lot of games at Texas A&M too. It gets really, really loud, JVT.
All right. Well, Taylor, I was telling Stormy this just a couple minutes ago. We were talking about this. Miami, narratively, we've been talking so much about should they be in the playoffs, they beat Notre Dame, the head-to-head, that I think that we have forgotten that at one point this looked like a tried-and-true national championship contender. So when you evaluate the Hurricanes, I think anything starts along the offensive line. How do you think this looks, this offensive line, taking on a front like Mike Elko's got with this Aggies team?
Yeah, I think offensive line and defensive line is obviously where you have to start with Miami, and you expected that when Mario Cristobal took over this program, that they would be really good in the trenches. And they have been. I mean, they're top 10 in the country in on the O-line and D-line. So I think that's going to be a really important matchup, not only to protect Carson Beck, because you kind of mentioned the ups and downs of Miami's season. I did the game where they lost to Louisville, and that was about as bad as Carson Beck has played all year. And one of the keys to the victory for Louisville was being able to pressure Carson Beck. So Texas A&M has the ability to do that. So how much can Akeem Mesidor or CeCe Mauinoa, I should say, on the offensive line impact the pass rush? Because I think that's a huge, huge key to this game.
To continue on Carson Beck, and you mentioned that game, I feel like one of the big issues for Miami's offense and both of their losses this year is just turning over the football. And Carson Beck combined for six interceptions in those two games against Louisville and SMU. He's had just one interception since that overtime loss to SMU, 11 touchdowns, one pick throughout the last four games. It feels like he's really hit his stride down the stretch. What's your feeling on how he's coming into this game, especially after the conversation earlier today?
Yeah, he was joking with us on the phone that he felt like the clicking moment for him was in that SMU game, actually. And he was like, it must have been the air in Texas, so that could be potentially good news for me, considering the game is in Texas this weekend. But let's go back to a year ago at this time. Carson Beck got hurt in the SEC championship game. He was about to get surgery on that throwing elbow, and he didn't even know what his future would look like. Eventually rehabbed, got back for the beginning of the year. But he told us on the call today, look, I was never, ever going to publicly say I wasn't 100%. He was like, but I was still coming into myself through the first 6, 7, 8 weeks of this season. And it wasn't that he wasn't healthy. It was just learning how to adjust to the new elbow, because he said it's different. The ball felt different coming out, and not to mention you're in a new offense with all these new pieces around you. And so he feels like it took him some time to A, get fully healthy, B, completely comfortable in this new offense. And he believes he's playing the best football of his life right now. He said when he decided to come back to college and he drew up how he thought the season would go, this is how he thought the season would go, is the way that he's playing right now, which is really good news for the Hurricanes.
What about Mario Cristobal? I think, and rightfully so at times, the criticism of him has been some of the decision-making in some of these big moments for his teams. How do you view him and what he can do on the margins as a decision-maker for this team going into a playoff game?
Yeah, I mean, I had him against Louisville, and that was kind of where the decision-making got highlighted, in the ability or lack thereof to make in-game adjustments to everything that Jeff Brohm was throwing at them. The thing with Mario Cristobal is he's an elite recruiter, and he has really, really talented players. So I think the margins for this Miami team is going to be a lot of relying just on that sheer talent and on the offensive and defensive lines. I think, we talk about Carson Beck getting pressure. Well, I also had the Texas A&M South Carolina game when South Carolina was able to get a ton of pressure on Marcel Reed, and they really, really struggled in the first half. And this Miami defense can do just that. I mean, they have two of the best edge rushers in the game in Reuben Bain and Akeem Mesidor. And so if they can really get pressure on Marcel Reed, I think it could go really well for Miami. So back to your question, I think it's just going to be Mario Cristobal relying on the talent that he has up front.
And they've done a really good job against mobile quarterbacks throughout the course of the season. I saw someone put out a stat earlier today. Byron Brown, DJ Lagway, Kevin Jennings, Tommy Castellanos, and Kyron Drones combined for just 74 total rush yards. So can they contain a little bit of what Marcel Reed tries to do? Let's move on to another game, though. By the way, Taylor McGregor of ESPN and ABC joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. She's going to be on the sideline for Miami of that Miami-Texas A&M game coming up this weekend. You also have covered a ton of Ole Miss this season. You are on the sideline for that Egg Bowl. I was joking with you before we came on air that, like, you and Marty Smith were being put to work that weekend with everything going on with Lane Kiffin. But you know this program really well, and with him moving on, what's your expectation for Ole Miss in their rematch with Tulane coming up on Saturday?
Listen, there's an element of Lane Kiffin that he brings incredible value to the sideline. And most notably, it's been reported and documented how he'll whistle to get his guys in the right formation pre-snap. And he's elite at reading opposing defenses, and he's a brilliant offensive mind. However, let's not forget, Charlie Weiss Jr. has called the plays all season. And although Charlie Weiss initially got on the PJ down to Baton Rouge, he has since returned to Oxford to help this team make a push in the playoffs. So maybe some of this is naive. I think the team's going to be just fine. I think with both of your play callers still in place, you have a team that it's been about everything but the players the past 2 months. And those guys have taken it personally. Look, they want credit for the best regular season in the history of Ole Miss. And now this is the biggest sporting event in the history of the state of Mississippi. And these guys want credit for it. So they're hungry. I think you saw that in the Egg Bowl. Even Lane Kiffin said it to me post-game. He was like, look, everybody wants to talk about distractions. I actually think it's brought this group together because they understand that it hasn't been about them and they want to make it about them. And it's really brought them together to perform at a high level. So with all both of your play callers still in place, you have a group of guys that's really hungry to continue to prove themselves. I think Ole Miss is going to be just fine, especially in the first round against a Tulane team that they beat pretty handily in, I think it was week 3 or 4 of this season.
Yeah, definitely won that game by margin. I think it's 35 points. They're 17.5 point favorite in round 2. Got about 30 seconds before we let you go, Taylor. Do you have a pick for who wins it all this year? Like, who do you think could really contend for the national championship when all said and done?
Look, so, you know, there's a little bit of bias against teams that we have seen in person. I had the chance to see Georgia in person, and it was right when they started to click, especially defensively, because that had been the knock on this group. They hadn't been as good getting to the quarterback this season. The secondary had been a little thin. I think they've put the pieces together. I think they're playing as good a football as anybody in the country right now. So again, it's a team that I've seen. I have not seen Indiana or Ohio State in person. And I have a ton of respect for what both those programs have done watching them on TV. But I think I'm going to go with Georgia. I just really, I believe in what they're doing. I think Gunnar Stockton is a total baller. He doesn't get enough credit. And so I'm going with the Dogs.
T-Mac, you're speaking to two people that have the Georgia Bulldogs as a pick themselves. You're awesome. Thank you so much for everything. We appreciate you. Safe travels to College Station.
Thank you. Safe travels to Oregon.
Thank you. Taylor McGregor, everybody, make sure you check her out on the call. ESPN, ABC coming up Saturday for Texas A&M in Miami. We got to take a step aside. We will be right back. More Money Moves kicking off hour two next.